Section 0 of Lives of the Queens of England, Volume 4. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Anne Boulay. Lives of the Queens of England, Volume 4, by Agnes and Elizabeth Strickland. Preface. The volume which we have now the honor of introducing embraces a new and important era in the annals of this country. It opens with the eventful history of the heiress of the Plantagenet kings, Elizabeth of York. This princess, as the consort of Henry the Seventh, commences the modern series of the Queens of England, and forms the connecting link between the regal lines of Plantagenet and Tudor. Elizabeth of York occupies a different position from any other queen consort of England. According to the legitimate order of succession, she was the rightful sovereign of the realm, and, though she condescended to accept the crown matrimonial, she might have contested the regal garland. She chose the nobler distinction of giving peace to her bleeding country by tacitly investing her victorious champion with her rights and blending the rival roses of York and Lancaster in her bridal wreath. It was thus that Henry the Seventh, unimpeded by conjugal rivalry, was enabled to work out his enlightened plans by breaking down the barriers with which the pride and power of the aristocracy had closed the avenues to preferment against the unprivileged classes. The people, tired of the evils of an oligarchy, looked to the sovereign for protection, and the first stone in the altar of civil and religious liberty was planted on the ruins of feudality. The effects of the new system were so rapid that in the succeeding reign we behold, to use the forcible language of a popular French writer, two of Henry VIII's most powerful ministers of state, Wolsey and Cromwell, emanating, the one from the butcher's shambles, the other from the blacksmith's forge. Extremes are, however, dangerous, and the despotism which these and other of Henry VIII's parvenu statesmen contrived to establish was, while it lasted, more cruel and oppressive than the tyranny and exclusiveness of the feudal magnates, but it had only an ephemeral existence. The art of printing had become general, and the spirit of freedom was progressing on the wings of knowledge through the land. The emancipation of England from the papal domination followed so immediately that it appears futile to attribute that mighty change to any other cause. The stormy passions of Henry VIII, the charms and genius of Anne Boleyn, the virtues and eloquence of Catherine Parr, all had, to a certain degree, an effect in hastening the crisis. But the Reformation was cradled in the printing press and established by no other instrument. In detailing the successive historic tragedies of the Queens of Henry VIII, we enter upon perilous ground. The lapse of three centuries has done so little to calm the excited feelings caused by the theological disputes with which their names are blended, that it is scarcely possible to state facts impartially, without displeasing those readers whose opinions have been biased by party writers. It is to be lamented that the pen of the historian has too often been taken up rather for the purpose of establishing a system than to set forth the truth. Hence it is that evidences have been suppressed or shamefully garbled, and more logic wasted in working out mere matters of opinion than is commonly employed by barristers in making the best of a client's brief or in mystifying a jury. To such a height have some prejudices been carried that it has been regarded as a species of heresy to record the evil as well as the good of persons who are usually made subjects of popular panegyric, and authors have actually feared in some cases to reveal the base metal which has been hidden beneath a meretricious gilding, lest they should provoke a host of assailants. It was not thus that the historians of Holy Writ performed their office. The sins of David and of Solomon are recorded by them with stern fidelity and merited censure, for with the sacred annalists there is no compromise between truth and expediency. Expediency, perish the word, if guilt have to be covered and moral justice sacrificed to such considerations. It is not always possible, in general history, to diverge into personal details.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?